Blog Talk Radio.
Here, and I'm trying to bring up the website really, really quick because I'm always doing 50 million things. Okay, so I want to bring up, because I was welcome on board on the Hollywood Stuntman Hall of Fame as a board of advisors, and I, every once in a while, well, I try to bring this up as much as I can because I like to actually, you know, help raise money because the Hollywood Stuntman Hall of Fame it started in 1973, and I always get the date mixed up when it went nonprofit in 1981, 1986, somewhere around there, but I'm actually going to the site right now. And it's a nonprofit organization, Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame, and this is exactly what it's about, and they are in need of funds. And I've been trying to raise money, and it's about the museum for the Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame. Hundreds of exhibits of rare artifacts and memorabilia of stars and stunt performers of motion pictures and television, featuring personal items of John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, Steve McQueen, and stunt legends in the movies, including Yakima Canute, Cliff Lyons, Dave Sharp, Ronnie Wendell, and hundreds of others. There are over 350 concrete blocks that contain the footprints and handprints, as well as signatures of many of the greats of the cinema, a collection that outranks those that are located at the Mann's Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. This rare collection had taken its founder, John G. Hagner, more than 65 years. Do you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? 65 years to gather and preserve for posterity, featuring parts of costumes, weapons, stunt equipment, photos and paintings and drawings, hats and caps, boots and shoes, and hundreds of items from the movies and television, plus videos, films, and film clips. The Hall of Fame has been in existence since 1973 and became a nonprofit organization in 1984, dedicated to preserving the history of the stunt profession and to honoring stunt people the world over. Currently, the Hall of Fame is without a home and needs financial support to enable them to afford a building in which to welcome visitors. Anyone interested in participating in this effort may make a tax-deductible donation to the Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame and mail to 81 West Kane, K-A-N-E, Creek, C-R-E-E-K, Boulevard, number 12, Mohab, M as in Michael, O-A as in Apple, B as in Boy, Utah, 84532. For more information, contact John G. Hagner. He is the CEO, the founder, and it has his number on there. It has his email address. You can go to the website, check it out. And it says, for additional information, go to Facebook and click in Falling for Stars, The Artist of the Stars, and Stunt Stars and Legend. And you can check that out. Once again, this is not just for the past stunt community, but it's for the present and for the future. So I keep once in a while try to keep bringing that up. So I'm trying very, very hard to actually raise money. So that's what I'm really, really trying to do here, because I do believe it is worth it, because if you really, really think about it, in filming too, if you really think about it, and maybe people don't think about this, but in the stunt community, in like the Oscars and such, other award ceremony, is there really any awards, Oscars and such, for the stunt community and their work? Because if you really think about it, the stunt people who do all the crazy stunts, they put their life on the line, you know, for these actors. And it's a very dangerous thing that they do. And I just cannot understand why these people don't win awards. To me, the stunt community is my community, and I love them very much, because I always grew up, I've never wanted to be a Barbie, I've always wanted to be a ninja. And yes, I had G.I. Joes, I cannot help that, but yes, 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 yes. And that's just my thing that I'd like to say. You know, I do believe the stunt community, they deserve this, they really do. And, you know, it's something too, I think there's a petition going around about signing for the stunt community about, I'll have to post it on my Facebook page later on. I mean, after this, I have to go straight to another film for Kill Entertainment and Entertainment Films. I'm going to be playing a zombie, so maybe tonight after I get back, I'll post that petition. Another thing that I'd like to bring up too, where is it? I have two other things before I actually pull on my guest here. Falcare. And this is something I would love everybody to check out. It is a film. My family at Unicovia up in Maine, in Standish, Maine, and I have been working hard on a film. This is a film that will show women in a very positive light. The film is Headmaster Z, who is the director of the film, and he's also playing Thor. We are in need of funds for our film. If you follow the link, I posted on my Facebook page. If you follow the link, you will find out where all the money will go to. All donations will be greatly appreciated. Thank you. Falcare, F as in Frank, A-L-C-Y-Y-R, fundraiser. So if you go there, you'll see everybody that's been working on it. Even when I'm not there, there's people working on production and such. So I do know for a fact where all the money is going, because I am part of the film. But everybody is a joint effort. You know, everybody's doing things, even down to craft service. This company does everything themselves, down to the makeup, down to the music, down to we're going to be doing our own stunts, ladies and gentlemen, and that's what, you know, there's so much into this, and we're getting down to the really good stuff, and we've all been working really hard, and I'm going to be training like a ninja even more because I want to help bring it to the best ability. So I'm just waiting for, let's see. Okay, let's see. I think I got Peter. I got Peter, let's see. I'm just typing something in on here. So I run everything myself. Maybe in the future I'll have an assistant. So what you people don't know, I'm like, I got one thing in one hand. I'm running the equipment here. And I'm trying to hold the cat down. My little furball co-host, Jackie Chinkity, you people don't see what it is in radio. Cat likes to test me because she's like, she gets jealous. She's a little furball. My little co-host, yeah, she was a stray in my backyard, and I kind of adopted her. And what better way than one of my idols, name her Jackie Chan. What a great name for a cat. She acts like a ninja. Anyway, my other thing, the last thing I wanted to talk about is a special foundation. And why this special foundation is special to me is because it is part of my family. And for my family down in Philly and in Boston, this is called the Sarah Joy Foundation. This foundation helps families who are dealing with terminal cancer. Why this foundation is really special to me? Because the people in this foundation is also part of my family. So if you like to give there, the Sarah Joy Foundation, you can check that out on Facebook. And I just posted everything on my Facebook page, and you all can check it out yourself at your time. So anyway, I think I might have someone in my queue. Give me one moment, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, it's me, Shelley. How are you?
I'm doing fine on this Ninja Sunday. How are you, Peter?
Well, great for a Ninja Sunday. Actually, every day is great for Ninja, but Sundays are particularly good for us.
Oh, yes. I was like, I'm so thrilled to have you on my show. Ever since Ron Lester, he had mentioned about you, he's like, yeah, and he was bragging all about you and stuff. So you must have, like, a big impact on him. I was like, yeah, I like to get him on my show, so welcome.
Well, thank you. And Ron Lester, hopefully he'll join us.
I'm scared. I'm going to talk to you as much as I can because you know his energy. You don't know which way the show will go.
Yeah, well, I'm going to talk to him about my broken door, gosh darn it. I sent you a picture.
What is that? Because I'm trying to explain. You sent me a picture of your broken door. So explain that to me because I wasn't too sure.
Well, the behind-the-scenes story on Ron Lester, which you can use to make him agonize, is that he'd come out and we shot a bunch of video, the stuff you see up there, me beating him up with a beer can and whatnot, and he was duly mm-hmm. impressed with all of that. And then within a couple of weeks later, he broke up with his girlfriend, and he was a mess, so he came out to live for almost a month. And in his upsetness, he smacked one of my doors, which is a foam core door. He's used to solid doors back east, you know, that won't break, but he broke my door, so he still owes me a door. So that's my way to get back at him, yes. Uncontrolled anger.
He needs to do some penance.
He does, and I'm going to make them suffer until I get a new door. Every chance I get, I'm going to talk or send this picture about my door.
Because I know I've seen videos with you and Ron, and I was like, oh, my gosh. I was like, you are kind of ninja. So I just wanted to know more about you because I was trying to do my homework on you, and it looks like you're a master of certain martial arts, and you teach, I think, on armed services. So first thing is, you know, growing up, how did you get into martial arts?
I started at the age of 6, and like many others, I met a bull in the kindergarten playground and just didn't like how that made me feel. So I ended up going home and asking my father to teach me to box because he was a boxer. And one thing led to another, and they got me into judo. And then, within probably a month or less, down on the playground a lot. He just couldn't seem to stand up very long. And that stopped that bullying. And one of my friends who was there at the time, we just reconnected here about 4 years ago, and we reminisce over that story quite often. And then the rest is somewhat history, going on into studying Hapkido and then going into the military and getting some training there and then going overseas into Cambodia for 10 months and then coming back. And after you've kind of sort of been in the real world, the going back in the dojo is a little strange. The dojo means a training place, so that became a little strange because there were so many rules and so many this, can't do this, can't do that. Just wasn't from where you've come, so to speak, and you've seen the truth. And then I ended up starting to study ultimately ninjutsu and that rank and title in that, as well as I started my own martial arts about the same time. So right in about 1980, 81, 82, when ninjutsu was just coming across the U.S., I was in part of that mix. And matter of fact, there's a link up on the web where you can actually go watch a 1982 demonstration that I did. Kind of cool because, well, the first part of it, I learned I talked too much at demonstration, but I gave the history of ninjutsu. And do you remember who Joan Baez was? Is?
Yes, he was a singer, like a singer-poet.
Yes, poet, singer. Right. Well, she was at this place and canceled out 3 weeks before, and it happens to be a biker bar that I had stopped at, and the guy was bitching because Joan Baez wasn't going to sing out on stage, and I had mentioned, well, gee, have you ever thought about putting on a ninjutsu demonstration, a ninja demonstration? And no. And that's how that got started. But I can post that in the – I can find it and post it in the chat box if you think.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. If you have that, I'd really like to see, because I think when I found you on the internet, I don't know how many the videos that I found, it looks like you were training some servicemen, and they were like in camouflage.
Yes.
And stuff. And I don't know how old those ones are. How long have you been doing this? What were you in service? Were you Marines, Army, Air Force, or?
No, I was in the Army, let me see here. Oh, I don't have your page up. Hang on here 2 seconds. Here we go. Here's a link I'm putting in the show. That takes you to the movies page on one of my sites, and the third item down is the 1982 Ninja Demonstration Part 1, 2, and 3, for those that are interested. But going back to – no, I was in the Army, and it was by accident in 2004 that I ended up becoming a subject matter expert for the United States Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. I helped them put together their program, videotaped it. They all came and lived at my house for like 3 months, and so now I'm one of the few civilian authorized Marine Corps martial arts program instructors, if I so choose to do that. But what happens is I end up becoming a guest many times at the various bases around the nation, and I go in and I teach what we call in the core plus material, or stuff that they haven't seen before. So that's how I ended up teaching the military.
Oh, so do you actually teach at a dojo or seminars? I mean, what do you actually also teach?
No, I'm semi-retired. I teach out here at the Salton Sea where I am. It's a beautiful area. I have my own beach. There's a big ocean sea in the middle of the desert. Really an oxymoron if you think about it. And so we can train out here, we can shoot guns and do everything. It's completely dark at nighttime, so all this ninja stealth stuff is good. Teaching people to get around at night.
That's sweet. I'd be like, run around like a ninja.
Oh yeah, no, we do that quite often here. We teach all kinds of in the art of invisibility in ninjutsu is called Inpo, or Inpo techniques, and it's the way to blend into nature and move. And so we have a beautiful place to teach that, and usually put two or three teams out at night, and then they have to go on a quasi-mission, have to go here, do this, get past that, grab this thing, find this thing, get back here, avoid anybody trying to find you. And so they get to practice their skills, their field skills.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds awesome. I mean, to me, it might sound weird to a lot of people, but, I mean, I would love to see that.
Participate in it. So heading up to that kind of an event, you have to put in some technology in the people, how to walk. There's 4 different ways of walking stealthily. Also, the Inbo techniques and how to blend, how to use exterior noise to mask your movement. How to take the shape of whatever you're in or around, so that when people look out to see you, your eye sees motion first, shape and color second and third. And so if all of a sudden you realize somebody's looking for you, you freeze like a rabbit would freeze, so to speak, but you also then try to take the shape of wherever it is you're around you. If it's a bush, you look like a bush. If you're around a tree, you look like a tree. And so basically their eye gets fooled because they're looking for trees and bushes, but they're looking for something that isn't a tree or a bush, and so you're not there. Shape is the second thing they look at, and we were just talking about that. And then color, if you can blend color-wise into your background, then you're theoretically invisible.
So, like, when people are dressing, right, because, you know, with movies and such, people usually wear, like, black. And when you're going to blend in,
right.
Now I hear different conversations, people wearing, like, more of a brownish color. Is it more based when, you know, you're doing these things? Is it black or brownish? I mean, what is the best color to, like, blend into?
Well, it depends on where you're going. If you're in snow, you want to be in white. You know, if you're in the jungle, you'd like to be in green. And, you know, so you have to know where your mission is. And that'll pretty much pick and choose what you wear if you have that choice. If not, then you decorate whatever you're wearing with mud, dirt, sand, whatever, to blend into the colors of the area. You can also stick branches and other tree pieces on you if you need to, and then shed those when you get out of the trees. You don't want to look like a bush moving, you know. So
yeah.
Using natural camouflage to assist you along your mission is taught as well. And then equally so, if you all of a sudden have to come into the light and blend into normal people, then you change back into your regular clothes or dust yourself off or do whatever, and then re-enter a certain area with a particular concept to get across that, and then poof, back into your disguise, in and off you go.
It sounds like stuff that I've been watching my whole life, but it's like the real art of it. It's some really serious stuff. And, you know, Ron had brought up something, and I didn't get to watch it yet, but he told me to watch this film. And he mentioned you about it, and if you can explain something, and I probably think I know kind of what it would be about. He mentioned the film with George Clooney, Men Who Stare at Goats.
Yes.
Men, I think that was the title of it. I haven't watched it yet because I'm doing 50 million things, but I'll sit down and watch it. What was it once again? He brought up your name, and I can't remember what it was, and he says watch Men with Goats, and it was something to do involving you, and I can't remember what it was.
Oh, well, yes, it's Men Who Stare at Goats is a movie that was essentially made from the book The Men Who Stare at Goats by John Ronson. And John Ronson came across and did a series, which you can find on the web, The Crazy Rulers of the World. And it's a 3-hour BBC special. John Ronson is kind of like Geraldo Rivera.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, you got him over on the blog, over on Facebook. You had some of those clips with me and him in the at the Marine Corps. Yeah, and so anyway, he wrote this book. I'm chapter 8 in the book, and then they made it into a movie. Well, basically, George Clooney is my character to a large part, and I actually put some stuff out on my YouTube channel that shows the and then the movie, and how they paralleled everything about that. So anyway, basically George Clooney plays me in real life in that movie.
Oh, okay.
Minus the drug use.
Minus the drug use? Oh, okay. Is that because didn't see the film? I just know that he's, like, staring at a goat so hard, and they're in the room, and the next thing I know, the goat,
right,
like, falls over, and then it's something about cloud,
right,
bending or something, and I'm trying to think.
Bursting.
And when I'm thinking of it.
Cloud bursting.
Yeah, and the way I think of it, the way, you know, basically, I don't know if it's compared to anything, but maybe not. You know how, like, there's elements in training in, like, Tai Chi or something, when they're saying, what
sure.
is it called, bursting clouds or bending clouds? What was the term?
Cloud bursting, yes.
What exactly is that? Does that have to do with anything martial arts, or is it telekinesis or whatever, I don't know the right word, metaphysical or something? I mean, what does that really mean, like?
Well, in martial arts, we talk a lot about ki energy, you know, the energy mm-hmm. from your mind and your essence of who you are, so to speak, and how you can project that on people and whatnot. And burst, cloud bursting is a similar thing where you're looking and you're projecting your energy into that certain area to clear it, to push the water molecules away or to vaporize them. And so cloud bursting in itself is not a difficult thing to do. I like to take the opposite, take a nice blue sky and make a cloud. Now, if you can make a cloud, that's showing some power.
I would like to get rid of the clouds because I can't wait to, I know that's like, maybe it's against Mother Nature, but, you know, it's like this, all the crazy stuff that they talk about, like, you know, about, I don't know if you heard about, like, chemtrails and all this stuff. So it's kind of like, the more I hear about clouds, I want to make them disappear, whatever it may be, because it just seems like, you know, it's so sunny. And then the next thing you know, next day, it's all cloudy. And I'm like, why is it so cloudy? And it seems like more and more. And I'm like, I just want the clouds to go away because I want to see the sun. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, absolutely. Out here, it's kind of the other way around. We really get excited when we see some clouds. You know, it's really quite different. Out here, we're blue sky most of the time, and that gets to be boring. But it's the desert. It's what you live in the desert for.
I guess it must depend on where you live, because up in Maine, I mean, I'm originally from Boston, but I moved up to Maine, and it gets so cold here, and the winters seem to last so long, and it's so cloudy, and I think... You know, I don't think I'm the only one, but I really think that a lot of people, I don't know what it's called, but if you don't have the sun, you get, I don't know if you can call it a depression or something, you get into this kind of funk. Do you know what I mean? It's something that's like you can't
Absolutely.
Wait for the sun to come back. Because I think we really, even though they say be careful with the sun, I really think we need sun almost most of the time in our lives, because it's something that kind of feels like it energizes. I don't mean to always sit out and bake in the sun, but I think we really need the sun to energize our, like, our spirits and our souls. I mean, for me, that's what I believe.
Right. Well, I think it's blue sky is more of what people need. If you look at depression, as a matter of fact, there's certain colors that affect humans, and blue is one of them. Most good websites are blue in color. Because of that, you feel happier, you feel lighter, you feel more apt to take new ideas than if you do in darker colors or reds, for example. And I think there's I don't think this is completely accurate, but it's something like periwinkle or pink. If you make a room pink and you bring a violent person into the room, they aren't violent anymore. That's how there's a whole study on color and how it affects us, you know. And that's assuming you're a normally color-sighted individual, which I'm not. So I don't see the same colors you see.
Yeah,
so they don't have the same effect. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a handicap that became a blessing, because when I was in combat, I don't see camouflage. You know, what fools your eye color-wise doesn't at all fool my eye. Matter of fact, many times it looks three-dimensional. So I was always the one shooting first because I could see, you know. And they wonder, what the hell am I shooting at? You know, but I don't see them like that. And turns out historically they used to take people like me, non-color sighted people, and put them in the nose of bombers in World War II, flying mission, and they would map the camouflage installations of the Germans all the way in until they did their bombing, and then on the way back out, they continued to map what they saw. And that's how we knew where they were. Kind of cool to use a handicap as opposed to thinking they're handicapped, to use them as an advantage.
So, like, with certain colors, right, because sometimes I like mm-hmm. black colors, but I really love bright colors. So, like, I love bright orange and bright pink, like bright blue. And they get me excited and I feel energized. I like yellows and everything bright. I mean, I like the side darker colors, but I love color in general. I don't know what makes me feel more alive. I don't know what it is, but I love colors.
Yeah, I think most people, normally color-sighted people do. I mean, I've only seen color once in my life, and it was pretty phenomenal, I saw it. And then I could really truly understand why people... people are so drawn to colors and magazines and things like that. When I saw what you guys see, it's pretty crazy. And maybe it was the first time you see anything, it's pretty amazing, you know. And for me, it was pretty amazing to see that. So, you know, when I design websites, I try to go out and find color palettes, and I have help, you know, for people that are normally color-sighted to help me pick the right color palettes for the type of business or I'm working with. So then everybody says, oh, the colors are so great. And the other thing that was really strange in the color world for me is I make these incredible DVD covers for all of the work that I do, and I actually won an award for the best colored design of these DVDs covers, right, and disc covers. And when they found out I was colorblind, they go, oh, how is this possible? You know, it truly is an oxymoron. And I explained to them, I'm an engineer by degree. All colors have an RGB value. All I have to do is pull it in the Photoshop and see what the RGB value is. It's all mathematics. And that's how I get around it. Yeah.
That's being smart.
Well, that's the idea. It's like in ninjutsu, a lot of people what they see on the movies are bits and pieces or glimpses of what ninjutsu really is all about. And what they see is true. Every story you've heard about ninjas are absolutely true. They can fly through the air. They can walk on water. Their arms are longer than a normal person's arms. They can disappear into the ground. You can't kill them. You can't burn them. That's all based on fact. But that's the really bizarre part. Now, let me tell you, let's take the walking on water part. Well, 1,500 years ago or 2,000 years ago, most of the samurai were very uneducated. None of them were educated, per se, okay? And so they were fairly ignorant. Well, ninjas needed to get across deepened waters or rivers and stuff like that. And what they did was they put one foot in a bucket or, you know, two buckets, right? And they used a bow staff to pull or to push them. All you had to do is keep your balance, and they would push themselves across the water and then get out and keep on going on their mission. Well, an uneducated samurai person would look, and he couldn't see the buckets, but he could see the feet moving, and he's walking on top of the water. So the story is they can walk on water, and the answer is yes, they can. To fly through the air, some of the ninjas used to do almost like a zip line. One ninja would crawl up a castle wall and then affix a cord, a very steady cord, mind you, a very big rope, that would allow them to do zip lines either out of the castle on their way out or zip lines on the way in. So if you saw a ninja flying through the air down the zip line, but you couldn't see the zip line, they're flying. So ninjas can fly. Yes, they can. Their arms were longer than normal people. Well, we use chained weapons quite often, and we'll have them balled up in our fist. So when we punch at somebody and we're far away from them, we hold on to one part of the chain and hit them in the face or whatever you're after. And from an uneducated person, you're watching this from afar. All of a sudden, you know, the ninja makes a motion with his hand and his arm coming out at somebody that was clearly too far away, and the guy falls down. And so their arms were longer than a normal person's arms. And so the legends that got started about all this stuff are absolutely true. But, you know, the ninjas used techniques and technology to create some of that. They didn't intend to create it that way, but they were very clever about what they did. And at one point in their history, if you caught a ninja in a building, they would evacuate the building, surround the building, and burn it to the ground. Well, ninjas were. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, 12 or 15 hours later, the ninja comes up out of the ashes and takes off running, continuing on his whatever. And they couldn't believe that they couldn't kill this person. And so what they did was, and ninja-wise, is they knew that in a fire, if you get down on the you know, on the ground, or you get as low as you can, fresh air is being pulled in by the vortex of the fire, so you could breathe cool, fresh air by getting down. And what their whole thing was to get down to the ground floor, and then they would use their shuriken, or shaken in that case, which are the throwing stars, or other implements, and they would pry the boards up and get down to the base and into the dirt. They would dig a hole and bury themselves, so to speak. So they're not going to get burned, and they can control their breathing a bit, and you still had all that nice, beautiful, cool air coming across you as the building is burning down. And then you wait until it collapses on top of you, so to speak, and then you push your way up through the dirt, and out you go. And so the whole concept of you can't kill a ninja came to being. Well, of course you could, but and they were killed many times. But the whole idea you couldn't get them like that, and they didn't know how they survived it.
Yeah, that sounds like they must have had a lot of training for that. I wonder how they would train for a building that would, like, come down. I mean, it's weird to think about it. It's like, how do they actually train for something like that?
Well, the ninjas, they're very, very different clans of ninjas, and they specialize. So each clan had a specialty. The Togakure Ryu Ninjutsu, the clan that I belong to, was nothing but assassinations. Their expertise was in assassination. But there are clans that were experts in kidnapping, clans that are expert in sabotage, arson. All of them did intelligence gathering to some degree. They all had the ability that they could go into battle, so to speak, in regular battle, in regular units, and cause havoc on the battlefield. Ninjas would stealth in and become part of the enemy and the enemy's castle at the right time. They would open gates. They would set the place on fire and cause all kinds of distractions interior-wise while the good guys on their side are trying to get into the castle to kill everybody. 3 days ahead of time, they would poison the water sources so everybody would be sick. They would kill the dogs. They would kill the dogs off so that it couldn't be used to find ninjas on the way in, things like that. So there was always a distraction and an amount of chaos that they would do.
Oh, a lot of chaos, yeah. And they do it very quietly.
Sometimes they do. Most times they do, but sometimes they were very broad with what they would do. I know there was one very famous ninja that was to attack this one warlord at night wherever he could, as many times as he could. But what he did was he went to the city and he set up a dojo and taught judo essentially to the samurai. And so he got to know the samurai personally very well during the day and would be killing them at night. They'll talk about that one, you know, and he had to leave his family behind to set this dojo up, and he even married another person for their cover. You know, they're very much like the CIA, and that was kind of sort of how they were.
I think Ron just tagged me in something.
Okay.
I was like listening to you, and I think something came up, and I'm like, I wonder what he says. He says to ask you something. Wait, let's see. He said, Peter is the best. He loves you, man. Ask him. Okay. He just ask him about the bedroom door. He lives to give me crap about it. Peter's one of my dearest friends and loyal as hell. I'll do anything for that man. I was like, he already did. I'm gonna put down. He already did. Did. Call. I should have him call. Yeah. Call in if you can.
Yeah.
call in if you can.
We'll have a good time bantering back and forth. Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to post that right there. So I just want to make sure, because I try to tell people, let me talk to my guest for a little bit, and then it's like, then I'll take some calls, and I'm going to put the number down so that he sees it. But while waiting to see if Ron can call in, you know, what's that little, it looks like a weapon, but it's plastic, and it has a hole in it. What is the thing that you're holding? And I was posting about it. What kind of, you know, it was something that was really effective. I saw you, like, using it, and it's only, you know, within the palm of your hand. It's got some sort of circle, and you do damage on the, like, acupressure points. What's the name of that weapon? I think you – I don't know if you invented it.
Yes, that's called a Defender. And the Defender is a small plastic tool, and there's 11 models of it now. Some are far more vicious than other ones. But it takes about 20 minutes to learn to use that tool, and then you're a serious contender. There aren't too many people that can stand up to you when you have a Defender. And Ron Lester has been on the opposite end of these things enough, and he screamed like a little girl most of the time. And I that's okay, though. I take it to the Marine Corps when I go to teach, and I tell everybody, I said, hey, guys, you know, they're tough guys, too, you know. I said, about 15 minutes, about all you're going to be able to take of this tool, and I said, I guarantee you, you'll utter sounds out of your face, out of your body, that you don't even think that they're human. Some of the sounds that people make at the opposite end of these tools don't sound human at all. And I said, then you're going to cry like little girls. Trust me, you're going to scream like little girls. And sure enough, they do. And they can't believe it, how much pain that this thing causes you. And it's a phenomenal tool, not because I invented it. It just is a really incredible tool altogether.
Yeah, and it's something you can, you know, you can conceal. You can carry, and it's not something, you know, how some states have, you know, FID cards. Because I always tell women, you know, because it's like, they're not always going to, if they have boys and stuff, not your whole entire life. There's going to be times when you're going to be alone. And it's always good to have something where I'm telling people, you know, carry a small can of bug spray, other things, because, you know, in some states, you have to get permits, and everybody has different, you know, weapons regulations. And looking at this thing, it looks like really something like a woman could carry in a purse, because, you know, sometimes, like, even with your keys, to hold your keys in your hand. But this looks like it's really effective. It looks just like a kid's toy, like something they would use, you know, something a kid, but it's really a great weapon. I was looking at it, so, you know, I think you tap someone on the side of their head with it, and I was just like, oh, man,
yep,
that's awesome. The poor guys, you were just like, one guy, he was like, okay, I'm going to do this to you, and blah, 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 this and that. I mean, did anybody get knocked out by accident when they were using it?
No, I've drawn lots of blood by accident. I hit one Marine in the head, and it just, like, a skin burst. It was boom, you know, and I go shoot. And my girls, I have twin girls, they were actually there. It was a green belt instructor's class that I was guest teaching at, and I beat this poor guy up. I mean, he, of course, I gave him a tool afterwards, but he was my, what they call in the Marine Corps, a meat puppet. Yeah, so he was my meat puppet, and he just took a beating. And he had Band-Aids all over this poor boy at the end of the, I mean, it looked like he was dog food. And the girls, they were about 14 at the time we were driving back, and they go, Daddy, I just think that Marine had thin skin. I don't know what it was, but they did. They did. Absolutely. And my girls are very well trained. My girls are very well trained, so matter of fact, when I were there, I was off working with the big corps, the group of Marines, and they were with the instructor types, and they were disarming handguns and rifles and taking them down at age 14. These guys wouldn't believe that stuff,
wow.
You know.
That's awesome. I give props to Deetcha Dotties, and I don't know if you're ready for this because someone's in the queue, and I don't know who it is, but should I bring the person on?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, let's see who this is. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, I would like to say how much I believe that Ninja Dad is, like, probably one of the greatest ninjas ever. And I still owe him a bedroom door.
Yeah, you do. God damn it.
Peter?
Leave that out. How the hell are you?
I miss you, brother. Oh, and by the way,
hey, I miss you too.
No, this is Ron Lester calling in because of the fact I worship the ground that Peter walks, because he is only one of the greatest martial arts instructors. Actually, I haven't said this so long. You're my sensei.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you certainly did have a good time here.
Nothing like living on the salted sea.
Well, it is
pretty
out, isn't
it? Stories. Huh?
Yeah, I was just telling Ron, it is pretty out here, you know?
The Salton Sea is probably one of the most underrated. It was back in the 30s and 40s, it was a really hot spot for Hollywood people. Bob Hope actually filmed a film out there at direction, and Peter lives in this little neighborhood that was actually kind of like Hollywood's little getaway. And if you ever seen the movie The Salton Sea with Val Kilmer, the tree that's in that movie is actually not even, 50 yards away from your back porch?
Yeah, my front yard, actually.
It's in the sea. Your front yard. It's an amazing place, except for the tilapia who ends up getting washed up on the shore and then smelling the next day. It's actually a really awesome place. It's very peaceful.
Yeah, well, it helped you anyway. You sat out there on the bench out there and watched many a sunset with that little dog next door that ultimately died. But it was a good place for you to hear, was for sure.
It was one of those places, like when I finally left and I moved back to Georgia to start everything over. It was one of those places where I finally had that moment of like, you know what, God puts you in a place. You are where you're supposed to be.
And that's where I was and you were. Way. Yep.
I was.
Yep.
And it's all because of you.
Yeah, well, we had a good time. It was fun. And until you replace my door, I'm going to tease you unmercifully about it.
I'm even going to make t-shirts.
I'm going to start selling Ron Lester Was Here t-shirts with a picture of my door on it.
That would be awesome. Oh, my God.
And number 69 on the back.
That's actually my incentive to never replace the door. That way I know for sure I'm always in your heart.
I had a guy yesterday who goes, what the hell happened to your door? Let's replace that. And I go, well, can't replace the door yet.
Here's the funny thing. You walk into Peter's house. There's an F-16 on the wall. There's all these ninja swords and stars and, you know, tools of destruction and death. And then all of a sudden, there's this hole in Peter's door. And you just go, now, wait a minute. Here's a guy who keeps and sleeps with a Glock underneath his pillow because he has a price on his head, has to keep his beachfront property leveled so no one can sneak up on it, but yet he allowed some fool in his house, drunk and upset over a girl, to punch his door. How does that happen?
It only happened once, because then I told you I'd cut your freaking arm off if you do any more damage, you know?
That's true. Go out
to the beach and beat up a tilapia, you know? Don't beat
up
my house.
And I'll never – the sword, by the way, the sword that he pulled out, I almost wet my pants because I realized that it was true. He would actually cut my arm off. So. Hey, I will tell you a fun fact real quick. I just did the Dallas Comic Prop Expo here in Dallas, in Texas. And I was with Peter Mayhew, the guy who played Chewbacca, Glenn Morshower, who's always in, Transformers and stuff like that. They're all friends of mine. Anyway, we were all kind of sitting around in the green room, and you have all these people who are huge Star Wars fans, right? And they walk around, and they can give out the dictionary of everything, and, you know, just they know it all by heart, and they live for Star Wars, okay? I actually stepped up, not being a person who knows all this stuff, but I said, let me ask you something. Have you ever seen Men Who Stare at Goats? And they said, well, only one person said yes. I said, well, the George Clooney character was actually based off of my friend, Peter Busso. And you do understand George Lucas got all of Star Wars from First Earth Battalion, which Peter was a member of, the Stormtroopers, the Force, everything. And I opened up a can of worms. And let me tell you something.
No.
The next day, I had 15 different people coming up to me, ask me where they can find the movie Men Who Stare at Goats. and how they can get in touch with Peter. Because some of them went online and they started looking at stuff about First Earth Battalion, and they had, and it was just kind of like going, it was kind of like, it was like introducing math to a mathematician. You know, it was so weird that I'm like going, you guys think you know everything about Star Wars, but you don't even know where George Lucas came up with the concept. Well, there's Peter. Peter lived the concept of what George Lucas was inventing. He is First Earth Battalion. You know, you're talking about a man who, Peter, and I don't know if you've said this, I'm not sure I'm supposed to say this, but ladies and gentlemen, you're talking to a man who was dropped behind Cambodian lines when we weren't there with only a machete and a knife and was able to do hand-to-hand combat in a 3-foot radius. Hmm. That's how badass Peter is.
I'm just an old fat man. Come on now.
You guys made me very happy. No, seriously, you guys just made me very happy because I was bringing up the fact before, and I was like, you know, George Lucas, and people kid around about Jedis being ninjas, and I says, you know something, if you really think about it, because everything martial arts is up, it's kind of a spiritual thing, and it's like, because it's really, you know, almost if you really think about it, it's almost like maybe metaphysical and stuff like that. And I mentioned that, and people are like, no, it has nothing to do with that, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I had taken the post down, and I wish
it
I had
saved it. It has everything to do with it.
It was in my notes. And it says, no, it doesn't, and it has nothing to do with that whatsoever. And I'm like, now you guys just confirmed, and I swear, I wish I'd never taken the notes down, because I would have tagged you guys in it, because you just proved live on the air that I was speaking the truth and I wasn't full of bull crap, because that's where George Lucas got from. So thank you so much. You just made my day.
Hey, Peter.
Yeah, no, it's everything about key energy and that spiritualism.
Oh,
and
Peter, hold on. I got to tell you something real quick. You know, how we talk, you know, talking about the key, okay?
What?
So,
key energy.
Key energy.
Oh, okay, I thought you said the kitty. I'm like, what? Okay, key energy, uh-huh.
Oh, no, I pet the kitty. But no, this
yeah,
is
Yeah, I
key.
Know you would.
You didn't pet the kitty. You spanked the monkey. That's what you did.
I knew it. I knew it was going to go somewhere.
I actually repainted Peter's walls. He just didn't know they were white. sorry. So I had this one guy, he's actually the MC announcer for the show, and he walks around in this Jedi outfit every day. And he is Mr. I Know All, right? Well, you remember the very first simple test you taught me? The just laying there and let you lift me up, and then you
right.
taught me rechannel my energy. And so the next time you went to lift me up, you couldn't lift my body?
Correct.
Okay. I did that to him live in front
oh, wow.
of probably 2,000 people to prove to
right.
him that this is something that is real. And it just blew everybody's minds. I'm like going, and this is like the simplest thing that Peter did to me. I walked away with bruises and cuts and sore, especially my nipples. For some reason, everything that we did. Oh,
that does not sound good. That does not sound good.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's going to explain that because I'm not getting off the air with that trailing around. Thank you very much.
If you go on YouTube and you look up Ron Lester with Old Man with Kane or Ron Lester with Peter Brusso, you will find one of his favorite things to do to me was when he was teaching me, and this was all at 1%. What he could possibly do. If he did it at 100%, I wouldn't be talking to you. But at 1%, he was showing me the stuff he could do with a cane. And every time I turned around, he was poking me with his cane in my chest. But it was never like, it would never hit me in the chest. It hit me in the nipple. It's still today some of the funniest stuff that I think I've done and over the years that I have. If you want to see something funny and me getting beaten up and sound like a little girl, go watch me and Peter. you know.
Yeah, I did.
It is hilarious.
I did see it. And I actually have somebody want me to bring up someone named Robert Weeks. He says, ask Pete about the only training partner who ever stabbed him in the back with a knife and lived to tell about it.
Is he on the air? Is he on the air with us by any chance?
He's writing underneath something. He's writing under, he's responding underneath. I posted, it says Ron Lester in a beer can defense, and it says, it's like he posted something, and then it's like Ron posted something, and then Robert Weeks, he's just requesting me as a friend, too, so I'm going to accept his friend request. You know who the guy is?
Yes.
Of course I know who Robert Weeks is. Not, yes. He's a great guy. No, I think, Ron, you never met this guy.
You told me about him. I never met him.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. I mean, he's a great guy, actually. And, yeah, he's the only guy that stabbed me in the back and lived to tell about it. So here we are. This guy is a detective for a DA. And so, you know, right off the bat, you don't mess with him too much. Otherwise, you go to jail. And anyway, so he got interested in the defenders, a little plastic tools, and he became an instructor. He lives in Brawley, which is about an hour away down on the Mexican border. And so he wanted to come up and get some training. So, yeah, that's no big deal. So he came up. And he's the nicest guy, right? And you could tell he was a little bit he trained. I mean, he was coordinated and stuff. And so we got working, and I started to show him about how you disarm a knife from behind, right? So usually wait until either they poke you, touch you, or you back up into it so you can see where it's at a little bit. It isn't absolutely necessary, but it helps the technique. Well, he stabbed me, he literally poked me. Of course, I obviously disarmed real knives, right? I'm such a realist, right? I'm standing there, all of a sudden, he stabs me in the back. I go, God damn it! And I swung around and took that away, and I said, normally I would give you tit for tat, but I'm going to be the big man here and not do that, God. Gosh, you know? And so he couldn't stop laughing that he stabbed me in my back. And I'm going, you son of a gun. Well, he just recently came up to train with my teacher. And that whole, I said, here, have a knife. You know, and we tease constantly about that. Plus, that new tool that we have, the RP Defender, he scratched me in an altercation. He went after my stomach and he got me. And I still have a scar on the thing. So here's this guy. He stabs me in the back, brands me with my own tool in the front, and he's alive, you know?
Okay, well, now,
and it's just it's a testament of being a good teacher and not killing your students off, you know?
Hey, Peter.
Yeah.
I hurt your door. I didn't hurt you.
That's correct. You never did hurt me. I agree. So Robert Weeks is he's really pushing the edge of the envelope out there, God darn it. You know?
And he's alive.
I need the new defender.
Yeah, you do. Send me your, when we get off the air, send me an email with your address.
I'll text it to you. Yeah, done. Because now I need a new defender.
Yeah.
Actually, I need all the defenders. Because, believe it or not, I've actually been, like, for the last year, I have been pushing the tool. Because here's the thing, I still want us to be able to do that thing with the Marine Corps, where we go for fun, that one day, that one day out of the year. Because guys, you have to understand something. Peter and I were so funny together that, like, I'm the kind of comic, and I'm an actor. Like, I'm committed to what I do. When I do it, I do it. So if I walk away with a scar, if I walk away with a fracture or something, I do it. But here's the thing. I have never been physically more abused and laughed harder while it happening than working with Peter. And Peter is like, going, wouldn't it be great if we could just do kind of like a one-on-one
show?
Yeah, and,
a roadshow. We'd be hilarious together.
And I still want to do it. I really do. I really, really do. And I think that on one hand, you get two different versions of what's going to happen. We come out there, you and I, you demonstrate on me, which we can only do once a year because my body can't handle it. You know, I got to have a year to recuperate. But if we went out there and we filmed this, it would be the funniest damn thing in the world. But it also let the guys know that, look, you know, that was at 1%. Look how much Ron is hurt. Now, tomorrow, when you all show up, we're going to run through this, and it's going to be 100%. You know? And, listen, you guys don't understand how much Peter actually gives to the Marine Corps. He is an absolute true troops supporter. And that's the thing I love about Peter. It's not that he's a ninja, he can kill me. It's not that he can look at me and kill me in a single breath. That's called respect.
Yeah.
You know? Even though he is old and fat.
Hey, now wait a minute. I gotta stop you right there, because this is the thing. Oh my God, we have to reprogram society when we say that, because for me personally, because of my hours and stuff, I don't like to say when someone's old to be getting older and more experienced. You know why? Because
those people
that are older than us, they can kill us.
I can say that. I can say that to Peter, because the fact that
I will never say
trouble.
That.
I was 508 pounds, and now I'm not. Okay, I'm about to turn 44, okay, even though I don't look it. Peter, see, that's what's so deceitful about Peter. Peter looks like this chubby old guy, but yet Peter can kill you.
you can never judge within an inch
of your life without even, like, breaking a sweat. It's amazing.
I can't do that. I can't do that out of respect. No, I will never call someone that. I would say older. I know it's what you're saying, the points.
Oh, no, no. Trust me.
Learning.
If we were talking porno, okay, Peter is a porno star.
I'm a what?
A porno star. If we were talking porno, you would be a porno star.
Oh, right.
I mean, you know,
now,
I mean, if
what the
if,
hell have you been smoking down there in Texas?
I told you it, Ron. Did you see? You see what
I'm
says? We gotta wait a little bit.
No, I'm trying to translate. I'm trying to say that, you know, what I'm saying is, it's like, it's not, when you hear me say the words, he's old and gotten fat, that's not, I'm not being disrespectful. My thing is this, it's like, it's actually what, Peter, it's what you taught me. Do not underestimate your opponent. Don't look at the person and think you can sum them up just because of what you see. It's not your eye.
Well, that's true.
It's not your
eye. And that's true. I mean, you take a look at the Jedi Knight in the Star Wars. You know, they were made up of all kinds of different things, including, look at Yoda, you know. And it's a matter of your life force that you're wheeling around, not whatever God gave you or didn't give you, you know.
And you guys are listening to a guy who has a life force that could kill you.
Well,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's, let's it's, not it's, get it's, lost it's, in the part there, Ron Lester. But
no, but what I'm saying is, the thing is, it's like if you were that person, and you know this as well as I do, because you even taught me this. That's what some of what we're doing on YouTube. Don't underestimate the old man with a cane.
Hey, and that's the first law on the battlefield. When I go in into the, you know, to teach, a lot of guys heard about me as some kind of legend or whatever. And you walk in, and I usually say, where's the bathroom? Because anytime you're over 50, that's the first thing you want to know is where the hell that bathroom is. And so I go to the bathroom, or the head, as they call it, and I come back out, and you can hear them mumbling, that the guy? You got to be kidding me, you know? And I'd ask for the biggest, meanest, strongest Marine to come choke me, and then I trash them out with a single finger. And they just are at awe with that, and that awe keeps going on. And the first law that you've got to teach them is never underestimate your opponent. So you get out on the streets of Baghdad or something, and there's an old fat, you know, guy in a rag, and you're discounting because he's not all buffed out, you know, and that's the guy that'll kill you. And so
exactly.
You know, that's the life lesson I try to put out there. By the way, I got a couple of questions for one statement. Black Roses is listening to us here. She's a good friend of mine from Ohio and a Second Life friend. And she wants to know, first off, did I have a training video on the tool? The answer is yes. And the second one, she wants to know, what was the music you were playing, Shelley, in the intro?
Oh, the music. It's a wonderful song, and it's very special to me. It's called Battle Song, and it's an epic song where there's one of my film families, Unicovia Pictures up here in Maine. We've been working on a film, and it shows women in the very positive light, and I'm one of the leads. We're Valkyrie.
Mm-hmm.
And Headmaster Z, his name's Ahura Zakora DeLisa. He's a man of martial arts. I trained a year in Tai Chi with him. It is his voice, mm-hmm. his music, and his beautiful, lovely wife, Sonari. And that song is actually going to be in the film. It's called Battle Song. And like with any film, music sets the mm-hmm. mood. And that's actually going to be part of a fight scene. And that's why that song I mostly always play, opening up the song, because, you know, it's about showing that, you know, women from different backgrounds, we can be beautiful and we can be strong and not just like a size zero to show that we're beautiful on our own way. And this film, Falcare, anybody can view and go and check it out. We're looking for also funds for that film.
Can you put a link? Can you put the name and a link to the music in the chat box for Roses?
It won't. I could probably try to find it on
okay.
the internet and post it on your wall, and then you can share it, and then she can see all the music. They were nominated with world music and stuff, but these people, there's no auto-tune. He does not use any auto-tune, whatever. He's a musician. He composes,
mm-hmm.
and he never uses auto-tune, and that's actually him, you know, singing, and his wife sings with him, and she sings like opera, and it's like, wow. And he's just, you
wow.
can check it out. We've been working very hard. We're up in Maine. We were filming, and it was very cold, knee-deep in snow. And this is, like, below
mm-hmm.
zero weather, and it was, you know, training on film, and we were taking horseback riding lessons. But the thing is, independent films, because people that do it, film companies, everything comes out of their pocket. And we've all been pitching in
sure.
together. And a lot of people, you know, we independent films, they look for funds. And if you even go, I'll even post the film on your page of the fundraiser itself, and you can see
okay.
where the money will go to.
Why don't you post
it
online? Why don't you post it
online?
I'm
gonna.
Well, I gotta be honest.
Okay.
With
I'll show you. Yeah.
I started teaching classes here in Texas, and that's something I think my students need to understand, because here in Texas, it's completely different. It's a I get exactly what you're saying, and I appreciate exactly how you're explaining that. You know what I'm saying? So my thing is this. That's actually how I'm trying to teach the people here in Texas to do things. I totally appreciate the fact what you're saying is when if you're trying to find the funding, you know what I'm saying, everyone's chipping in. You know, it's not just one person. And
mm-hmm.
just hearing that, you know, I appreciate that. In fact, I'll tell you right now, and not to totally take away from what you're saying, but I still want to help get Ninja Dad made.
Yeah, there's a – matter of fact, we're looking at maybe doing a Kickstarter on it. Are you guys familiar with Kickstarter.com?
Yes.
I will tell you right
yes.
here. I will tell you right now. No. Listen to me, Peter.
Yep.
Listen to me. I love
I'm listening.
You. I want to make sure everyone hears me say this. Don't waste
oh,
your time with Kickstarter.
Oh, really?
Okay? Here's the thing. Go to Indiegogo.
Right.
Or,
they're an equivalent, right.
Or Fund Anything. Fund Anything is actually Donald Trump's company.
Oh, is that
okay?
right?
The reason why you go to Indiegogo versus Kickstarter is this. Kickstarter, they give you a limitation. You only have so many days to earn
right.
the money
to
that
raise
you
your
need.
Money. Right.
To raise your money, and then what happens is
mm-hmm.
if you don't reach every single penny, you can be 50 cents off. It doesn't matter. If you
mm-hmm.
if you don't reach your absolute goal,
it's
you don't get anything.
That's right.
In Indiegogo, you have the option of being able to go, okay, you know what, instead of paying a 6%, we'll pay the 10%, and then whatever is raised, whether let's say, okay, like for example, my movie Race and Legacy, we're going to put it on Indiegogo next month, and we're asking for 10% of our budget, which is $25 million. So 10% of that is $250,000. If we hit $250,000, Awesome. If we don't hit $250,000, guess what? We still get to keep the money,
mm-hmm.
but we only give a higher percentage back to them as usage. So in other words, like, you know, instead of 6%, it'll be 10%
right.
of what we raised. But the thing is, we still walk away with a guaranteed amount of money. You can't do that with
right.
Kickstarter. So go Indiegogo or fund anything,
yeah,
which is Donald
fundraiser. That's the same thing. That's what Falcare Fundraiser, it's been ongoing. It doesn't end. So they get to keep all the money. So that's another one, too. Fundraiser, like the one you said, that's the one that we're using with
right.
that. So it also shows you can either leave it anonymously. If some people, if they like to keep it quiet, they don't like all the attention, you can leave.
Right.
You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? You don't have to say that. Some people probably don't mind giving, but they don't want all the attention. So that's another thing with fundraiser. You don't have to say who you are if you want to donate. That's another thing, too.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good thing to be anonymous like that. But at any rate, what I was getting around to as well, Ron, was the I had another friend here who I was teaching gun disarms to. Well,
uh-huh.
actually, he was a stinger. So I made him wear my Glock, and every time I approached him, you know, he would have to draw and point shoot at me, right? And non-life rounds.
Are you talking about the same thing we did on the beach?
Yeah, very similar, yes.
Okay.
And but in this case, I went ahead and grabbed the gun and started to wrestle me with it, and I ended up taking the weapon away ultimately. And he goes, "My God, you know, you hobble around like Yoda, and then you fight, you know, and then you hobble away again." And more people have said, "You're Yoda," and I turned to him, "What do you mean by that?" You know, and I hobble around. You would never expect me, but when I get into my element, I don't have any pains anymore. And all of a sudden,
you
it's
are,
blah, blah,
but
blah,
you're
blah,
Yoda.
Blah.
Dude, you're
yes.
short, you're fat.
I bore Yoda the
okay?
duck.
You have a cane.
Yes.
Okay. the only difference between you and Yoda is that you drive an H1 Hummer, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, if Yoda had a car, that's what he gets.
Oh,
you're both missing hair. You have big ears. You're not very attractive.
Oh, Ron, you're so mean. You better be careful because he's going to take you down. Do you know all he needs is one finger to take you down?
Also, I can start projecting myself right now. You know, gee, Ron, what kind of headache are you starting to have?
Nothing.
You know what? I feel a migraine coming on. Is that you?
That's right.
You're in my head. Oh,
you better watch out. He might make you pee your pants live on the air, so you better watch out.
Well, that might not be as hard as it sounds. I've seen him just about pee his pants before, so that's good. You know, one time when we were out and about training,
Ivan, I know exactly where you're going, so make sure you get the story straight.
I want to hear it. Good stuff.
He goes to hug. I have these knife throwing targets that are man sized. They're pretty impressive. And so he goes and hugs the target. He's got his arm around the target, and he says, "Could you really stab somebody that, you know, this close?"
This
and I turn and
this true.
And stuck right next to his head. But I stuck the head of the target right. And he looks at that. Holy shit! And I mean, I was 6 inches away from his head, stuck right dead center in the bad guy's head that he had his arm around. And I think he damn near.
There's no absolute 100% way. If I didn't believe in Peter, I would have been standing next to that wooden dummy and let him fling. It's not like a throwing star, but it's a throwing knife. Okay.
Yeah.
If I didn't believe 100% in this man's ability, there's no way I would be standing there going, "Okay, yeah, cool, show me." And I'm telling you, not 2 inches away from my face was this metal knife that was embedded in the wooden head of his dummy. not 2 inches. And when I walked away, I seriously felt my bowels go, you know what? We should just go ahead and exit now.
You know something, Ron? Before you go,
By the way,
what?
That's the reason why we wear camouflage. Because if you shit your pants, no one knows.
That's
yes, because
right.
You can smell it.
Hopefully, you're not that close.
Yeah, after you eat eaten. I don't know, Ron. I think that you know. And before you go to visit Peter again, let me know. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send you a box of Depends. I'm going to send you adult diapers because seriously, I want you to cover all ends. Because if you're going to be that crazy, strap on the Depends under your pants. But no, not for nothing. They have ones that are, I think, very comfortable, so they're not noticeable nowadays. So I'm going to send you special Depends. So if you pee and pull yourself, you know, at least you'll be ready. You won't stain any clothing.
Well, I will tell you this. I won't need them because, again, I believe in Peter 100%. If there's going to be a mistake, it's going to be a natural mistake. It won't be because of the fact he didn't know what he was doing. But I will tell you this right now. The moment that I have the opportunity to be in the same room with Peter, it will be an awesome day. And I really do hope that in the future we're able to do something for the Marines at Camp Pendleton that we can make them laugh, but then make them realize the severity of what's happening. And if there'll never be a day where I go, I wonder what I can do for Peter. There'll always be a day of where I'm going, how can I promote Peter and show my belief in him? Peter's like one of the people in this world that I believe in.
I mean, if there's ever anything you guys need promoting, you know, just let me know and I can post it on my page. You know, I don't mind.
Well, I don't know. I feel like singing.
Shot last week.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm feeling like a kumbaya moment here. We ought to start hugging each other and yelling kumbaya.
You
and
don't
no,
want me
and
to
no
sing.
Reach around.
No,
whatever. No, if anything else, listen, the porno that I shot last week is more like, you know, it was out of focus, so it just looks like a small bone going back up in the ham. You know what I mean? You don't really know, but it's, you know, at the same time, it's, you know, you do what you can. You accidentally, on purpose, launch things to the web that, you know.
That's a good social media play. You never needed help in that part, though, as I understand, so I don't know what the hell you're doing there, but you know, maybe you need to come out here.
You know
we need
what?
To get your head screwed off.
It is. I think I need to come out to the Salton Sea. I need to find myself again.
Now, maybe I need to come down and visit you.
I would love that.
Yeah, we should do that, but be careful. If he ever gets a hold of chunky peanut butter, just be careful. Run. I'll never get it out of my head. And I'm like, I'm not eating peanut butter. But after Ron told me a story where he's a prankster about him in a diaper and chunky peanut butter.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Do you know about this, Peter? I don't know if you're ready to listen to this story, but I want Ron to hear play it again. I mean, see it again.
Right. Peter, remember telling you about my dear friends, Paul and Jennifer Taylor? Remember before I came out there with you? I was with them a couple of days. Well, when they first
right.
when
oh, yes.
first son, they,
Here
I,
we
I,
go.
We were at dinner, and I said, you know, what I'll do is, you know, they had the baby monitor was going. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I'll go change it. I got this. You know how to change the diaper? Yeah, I got this. So I go change the diaper. You know, no big deal. And put Jake back to sleep. And on my way out, I grab a brand new diaper. Okay? And on the way to the dining room, you can cut to the kitchen first. Right? So without them knowing it, I cut to the kitchen first, and I take this diaper, and I put chunky peanut butter.
Oh, you did tell me this. It's coming back now. Yeah, you did tell me this. That's right.
Inside the diaper. And then
this
I came
is seriously
back out,
good.
And I go back into the dining room. I'm like going, okay, I just got one question. What the hell have you been feeding this kid? You know, and I open it up, and I like a sniff it. And then all of a sudden, I just drag my tongue up and down this diaper. And chunky peanut butter, baby. That's people. That is a joke. Always put chunky peanut butter in a diaper, and you will gross your friends out every time. I promise.
My eyes are watering. Oh God, I'm gonna throw up. Oh God, just take this.
I was in a similar situation, not quite like that. I was in engineering college, and we had one classroom. This is in Sacramento. One classroom without any air conditioning, right? So we had the windows open, and we had flies, and it was summertime. And so I took a raisin and put it between my fingers, right? And I sat in the back row, and all of a sudden I slapped my front table, right, the desk, and everybody turns to look, and I lift my hand up, and there's the back raisin, which they thought was a fly. And I reach down, and I grab it and look at it, and I eat it. And I said, that's not half bad. It's close to everybody.
Okay, now hold on. If we're going to go there, look at Good Burger, okay? My movie Good Burger. I'm playing Spatch, the guy, you know, I'm the big fat cook, and all of a sudden there's this fly dangling in front of my face on a fish string, okay? And I'm supposed to, like, you know, hit myself with the spatula. But the thing is when the guy went to pull the fly away from my, this plastic fly away from my face, I hit it so hard that when he yanked it, it came off the string, and it was embedded in the fat in my forehead. And I'll never forget it. I just happened to see a tiny glimpse of it in my head of myself in the camera lens. And I'm like, So I reach up, and this is a – you know what? Listen, there are kids today who watch Good Burger who don't remember anything about it, but they only remember me eating a fly. And I took that fly, and I ate it, and I swallowed it. It took me 2 days to give the plastic fly back to the guys in props.
Oh, jeez.
You did not. Oh, God, I'm going to go throw up.
They gave it back to me. When we wrapped the movie, I got my actual spatula with a fake hamburger patty on it with the fly that I ate.
You didn't eat it again, did you?
Do what?
You didn't eat it again when you got it back, did you?
Well, no, it's glued to the hamburger, you know. But it's just the fact that, you know, that's the fun stuff you can do on set. You know, you sit here and go, hey, look, you know, let me get this back to you guys. And they're like going, what? You know, and then, you know, 6 weeks later when you finish the film, they're giving it back to you. You know, as a gift, with an autograph, you know, everybody signed my spatula with a fake hamburger patty and that fly that I ate on top of it, you know, and I still have it. So, but that's the fun part of making movies, you know. If you're comedic in any way, you're always going to make sure things are going to stand out, you know, and that was just one of those moments of, you know, but I actually appreciate the raisin story because now, I haven't thought about that, Peter. But
it works like a champ.
Totally. Going to use that now.
Yeah, it just put it between your fingers so they can't quite see it when you slap down and then you leave it there. You know, and it's like, and they wait till everybody looks at what the hell you just did, and then you reach down and grab it and look very inquisitive, right? Look it up and then put it in your mouth and start chewing it and go, hey, that's not half bad, you know?
Oh, that's so going to get done. And it's going to be. It's going to be done at the most inappropriate time ever.
Yeah, I don't know what prompted me to do that, but it was in our logic class.
I'll probably be at someone's black tie wedding, and that's where I'm going to do it. I'm always going to now. I have to carry raisins in my pocket. I have to carry raisins in my pocket no matter what now.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm so scared. I don't even know what would happen if I was hanging out with Ron in real life. I think I'd end up getting arrested or something. I just picturing that or peeing my pants. I think I have
ask
to
Peter.
You know those. Yeah.
Ask me what it's like to hang out with me in real life.
Well, when you were here, we were having a good time. When you weren't too drunk or crying a lot, we were having a good time.
Well, I am very sensitive, you know. Come on. But I will say this. I never ordered a pizza from up the street.
What does that mean?
That's true.
What does that mean? I want to know. You know, hey.
You know that that place now is the International Banana Museum?
Do what?
That place now is the International Banana Museum.
What?
It's International Banana Museum? What?
Yeah, you can look it up. Honest to God, this guy opened that place, obviously. Well, here, Shelley, here's the deal. There's you know, out here, we have a very remote area. Okay? It's very remote out here. And,
Hold on. Now, Peter, that's even say it very remote is understating. It's understating.
It's really remote. It's really remote.
You're talking
40
miles away from the Mexican border, and if anyone speaks English around you, it's amazing. Two, you got to drive an hour and a half to get to the closest thing that's going to resemble a McDonald's.
Okay,
yeah.
I found it. I'm posting it on my Facebook wall right now
we
speak. I found it. You know, people, I'm liking the page. I am the 174th person that likes the International Banana Museum.
That's because it's that popular.
Oh, my gosh, look at this.
But
this
hold on, wait. Let Peter explain ordering a pizza.
What is that?
That's ordering a pizza. Not losing one, but ordering one. And so I had a client, a lawyer, who had come out here to do some podcasting with me. And I told him to get a pizza when he was passing through Indio, because there's nothing out here. And he didn't. And so he got out here, and there's this liquor store. It's just next door to now the International Banana Museum, which was a a pizza place, supposedly, right? So he went in, and here's all these Hispanics sitting around drinking beer, and he wanted to order pizza. We're not cooking pizzas today. They had the ability to cook pizzas, but they weren't cooking pizzas today, and he asked why, and he said, well, I mean, so we want to make sure and just be ready for that inspection. Well, turned out it was a house of prostitution. What happens is you go in there to get a pizza for a girl, and she either in the back of the pizza place, or if they know you well enough, they'll have your house in the local area here. So it was the house of disrepute masquerading as a pizza. And many times, I think that Ron actually went down and tried to order pizza. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, I'm like, I'm really craving Domino's right now. I'm really craving Domino's.
I think you had shaking in your mind or something.
When you ordered a pizza from there, you had to make sure you didn't get anchovies. That's the thing.
Yeah,
I think that's what you were.
Remember that film with Patrick Dempsey, Lover Boy? He was a pizza person, and they order special pizzas with anchovies, and he was actually a gigolo, and he went to older women's houses and stuff, and they ordered the anchovies, and he gave them a special, all right.
Exactly. Nothing wrong with the milk. Nothing wrong with the milk.
God bless them. God bless them. There's nothing wrong with that. You know?
Yeah.
I never ordered a pizza while I was in the Salton Sea.
What we need to do is to get the Ron Lester pizza franchise going, you know? Specialty peanut butter, chunky peanut butter pizza on one side and anchovies on the other.
Oh, God, no!
Oh, yeah.
The PB&J.
What was really bad was we had this little dog that it was the most darling dog. It was a neighbor's dog.
It was never a neighbor dog.
He was always with us, you know, because we fed him hot dogs. And so one time Ron was just feeling really lonely and sorry for himself, and I gave him a jar of peanut butter. And he looked at me, what's this for? And I said, just put it downstairs. The dog takes care of the rest. You'll be just fine.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, yes, I
did. No, he did. That never actually took place. That never actually took place.
It'll happen next time.
No, it was suggested. It was suggested. Because, you know, guys, it was suggested, but it never took place. I kept giving him the wieners.
Yeah, well,
not mine. Yeah. Not my wiener. Not my wiener. But I kept getting
I hope
off.
Not. I hope not. Speaking of specialties, right? Speaking of Ron's specialty, what was this you showing your milkshake brings all the girls to the yard about a striptease and about someone throwing quarters at you or something?
Oh, just recently.
Yeah, at the Comic-Con. I'm like, what is he doing? He's off his knees out of his mind.
Okay, well, here's the thing, and here's something that actually Peter can actually, he'll actually vouch for, okay? I'm a huge, huge troop supporter. There is nothing I will not do to bring awareness or support for anyone that is in the military. I am an absolute true supporter of our military system, okay? I'm at the Comic-Con thing, and one of the great things is Peter Mayhew, who played Chewbacca, great guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm actually in love with his daughter right now, who, thank God, doesn't look anything like him. is a troop supporter. So we're there, and they have a thing where they work with Wounded Warriors. Okay, I'm working mm-hmm. with the Lone Star. I'm working with Lone Star Warriors right now in Texas, and they work with like snipers and infantrymen and all that kind of stuff. And they give them a chance to go hunting and all that kind of stuff. So I'm working with the Lone Star Warriors. I'm also working with the Lone Star or the Wounded Warrior Project, and they had a whole thing where they had they had all these comic guys. You know, the guy who draws all the comics for the Green Arrow and the DC Comics, Marvel Comics. I mean, these are the top comic drawers, if you want to put them that way. I don't know the proper way of saying it, you know. But anyway, they were in town. They were at the show, and they're doing a live auction. These people would draw their characters, and then what they were going to do, they were going to sell them for, you know, as much as they can to raise money for the Wounded Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
I am not an artist, but I figure what I'll do is I'll draw something. If it made $5, it'd be awesome. So I draw.
I can only imagine.
I drew a big fat me in a Billy Bob outfit, and it said 10 to fucking 10. With a pig, all that kind of stuff. I sent it one of one. Well, here's the thing. I was the second highest bidded piece of art.
Really?
It got to like 103, 105, then it went 110. And I said, if it goes to $200, I'll strip. And instantly, a husband and his wife bidded. It went to $200. So I look at the DJ, and I tell him, like, okay, here's the deal. Play me my song. And earlier he had played Me So Horny, the unedited version. And I asked him, I was like, play that song. So he plays it, and I start stripping. And here's the amazing thing. I hadn't done laundry. And I was really happy the fact that I had clean boxers on. So
that's always a good thing. That's a good plus. No.
So I'm sitting there. I start stripping, and I end up showing a tattoo that's on my butt that says your name. You know.
Your name. I tell that story quite simple. I tell this story all the time.
So,
your name here.
So, well, it's a good tattoo, man. Come on.
You got a lot of free drinks and other things with that tattoo as well.
Well, here's the thing. You got to understand, this tattoo I got when I was 508 pounds, okay? Now I'm like 196 to 200 if I don't poop properly. And, you know, the tattoo is a little bit bigger. It's stretched out. Now it's like the size of the Guadalajara, you know? You put neon on it and you can see it. So
I got a lot of jokes I could tell. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so your friends. your friend Robert said he left. He says he had to go, but he says, you know, he wants to, he looks forward to visiting sometime. So he says, thanks so much for the fun and laughs today. So he was excited about the show. I guess we made Robert Weeks his, we made his Sunday. So just to let you guys know, he just wrote to me.
Nice.
Okay. Nice, yes.
No, but going back to this thing, so I striptease, and my whole thing is this. Basically what I do is I start having people start putting money in my underwear, which is good.
Oh, you love that, don't you?
Well, you know what? Actually, I do. It's a good feeling.
I know.
I won't lie, you know. So I did this whole thing where I collect this money in my underwear, and when I got done, my drawing ended up raising $200 at the auction, and then I raised $47.27 or 25 cents in tips.
Striptease. Yeah.
In the striptease. So as the girls are pulling money out of my underwear, help me count it, I feel something move, and it goes down my butt crack, which I don't have.
I was
going to
say,
anymore.
Wait a second.
What?
I knew where that quarter was going.
I don't have a butt anymore, you know. So the fact that it worked its way down, I'm like going, wait a minute, what? And I reach down, and I grab the cord, and I pull it out. I'm like going, wait. So it's what? $47.25. So I'm like going, who put the quarter in my ass? You know. So, but no, it was fun. It was good jokes. It was. And the thing is, we raised $247 for the Wounded Warrior Project, and you know, and it just goes to show that, look, here's the thing: if you're either committed or you're not, you know, and you can make fun of everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an insult. It's not a, you know, it's not a negative. Let's just have fun with it, you know. And you can always pull the positive into any negative. So, but my thing is this. If you're going to put money in my underwear, can we just not make it quarters?
Well, I just want to know if you ever saw that California swinging couple again.
I did.
There you go. There you go. Wow.
There's that information.
Did you use on them? You know, we're up in 21 minutes here. We got to bring this thing to a close in some meaningful fashion other than peanut butter and quarters in your butt.
Listen, okay? I'll tell you what. I will bow out.
We've destroyed this poor. No, don't hang up. We've just destroyed this poor woman's show. Now we have to fix it.
Well, don't put that pressure on me.
Oh, I put it on us, Kimosabi. Now, I honestly have to say, now this is another one of these true stories, Shelley, that I didn't realize that he couldn't drink a carbonated beverage because he had. Oh, yeah. That beer can thing. If you watch the beer can self-defense thing, I was laughing. I was absolutely torn up over this whole thing. I hadn't even gotten started yet, you know, but he drank this beer, and then he kept burping. It was like, I've never seen a burp like that. I've never seen anything that even sounded remotely like it. That wasn't even human you were doing, you know? And it just destroyed my whole technique. It was
It did. It really did. It was took the lesson funny. To a whole different level.
It certainly did. Boy, I'm not doing that again.
No, okay. And by the way, I don't know if you know this or not, but Peter, I got a letter from the FFA after that.
FFA?
Or FAA.
F-F-A. What? Oh, the FAA, yeah.
The FAA, the
right.
Airlines Association.
Right, right.
Peter took a beer can, and he poured down my ear, okay?
Yeah.
And showed me, this is how you get out of, you know, take someone close. If they're trying to fight you, take it out, you know, take them out. Pour beer down their ear, you know, okay, it distracts them. Okay, cool. All right.
Because it fizzes in your ear, it's just creepy, you know?
He takes a Miller Lite and he goes, chug it. I chug it. because it's comic, and I know it's going to hurt.
It was Coors. It was Coors. Coors Light. Coors Light.
Oh, Coors Light. Excuse me, because that makes a difference. It's, you know, but either way, I can't do beer because I had gastric bypass. And so here I am chugging this beer.
Carbonated beverage.
It's carbonated.
Yes.
That it's going to hurt me. And it hurts me. It does. And I'm having an effect from it. But the thing is, he takes the beer can, the empty beer can, and he collapses it. And he breaks it in half, tears it because it's weak. And he goes, now I have two defenders in my hand. I can cut your throat right now.
Mm.
I made the statement that I'm like, think about it. This. You could be on any airline. And they give you a Coke can or ginger ale or whatever. Doesn't matter. If you fold it and then you bend it, you can tear it apart. You have two sharp edges. And I'm like, think about it. That's what they give you on every airline. Now, here's the thing. They're taking away your pens. You can't fly with anything that's not a clear gel or a liquid. You got all these things. But yet, they're still giving you these cans on an airline. You can cut someone's throat with them. Anyway.
Yeah, but it's like anybody, besides, you can figure that out even before, you know, if you have a chewed a beer can. I mean, come on, people, you know how you do stupid things.
No. But here's the thing. Your average person doesn't think like Peter. That's the thing. Your average person is not going to sit here and go, hey, if I take my Coke can and I bend it in the middle and I work it back and forth and I tear it apart, I'm going to have two sharp edges that I can defend myself with. Your average person doesn't think like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Peter does. So therefore, I made that statement and it got out there. And I got a letter from the FAA telling me, please, do not condone or promote self-defense.
Wow.
Off of the interview that you and I did, that's on YouTube.
That's kind of crazy because you know how many people do so much stuff out there and you, of all people, I mean, seriously, Ron, you of
all
people.
I'm the last person that you would ever put with, hey, let me teach you how to kill somebody.
You know, I mean, come on. There's other people out there. Because not for nothing, you may be crazy, but you're actually harmless, Ron. In a way, you're really kind of, you know, it's like not being successful or anything. You do crazy things, but
my
you're
door
not
doesn't
really
think
a harmful
so.
Person. Huh?
No, my door doesn't think so. My door would be completely against that thought
no,
altogether.
No, I mean, towards people. I mean, towards living things, not intimate objects. How do you say it? I can't even talk right. I'm like,
Inanimate objects like doors.
Inanimate objects. Yeah. So things that aren't alive. I don't know. I don't think doors have feelings. So I think.
But here's the
thing.
I don't know.
Your average person on a flight, 100% of the time is not expecting their flight to be taken over by terrorists. 100% of the time, it's only that 1% of the time that you're ever going to have to be called. To have to maybe defend your freedom or defend others. But here's the thing. The fact that we were attacked on 9/11 and everything else that we can think of, okay, after that, these are not useless pieces of information. The thing is that the FAA or anybody else, they don't want people discussing with their average flyer, how do you take down a terrorist? Now, Peter has given me the information that if I have a person with a Glock in front of me, how to approach that person with not my hands up in the air, not my hands down low, but in the medium, and how it's easy for me to be able to sweep his arm. By the time he fires, it's going opposite of where I'm at. And then I can take that gun, and I can actually twirl his wrist, turn that gun up into the man's armpit, and fire, just in case the fact that he has a bulletproof vest on. I can took off rounds into the man's armpit, which is going to go into his head, his chest, or his heart. Missing his breastplate, the armor that he may have on. Even if he doesn't have it on, it doesn't matter. My thing is this. I did what? I disarmed a terrorist. And I can do it in less than 3 seconds.
Well, I mean, it's good
this
to know
is not what
you're a terrorist,
average,
but...
No. This is not what your average American should have to know. But there's people around you who does. And that's the security. And knowing that you have someone around you that in a moment that something of the worst caliber can be going down. It can happen so fast, your head is swirling and you have no idea how to react. But the fact that you have someone around you that can do that, that is what I think is promising. Hmm. And that's the kind of thing that I learned from Peter.
Martial arts people that have trained it because he's a ninja.
It's not martial arts. It's defense.
Well, I mean, like, I'm saying his martial arts, he's trained, he knows these things. Do you know what I'm saying? Because it's like he's passing it on. It's just regular, like, not martial arts, but defense. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's actually, if you really think about it, it's common sense. Because it's just not
it
a beer can. You can actually use it. I mean, it's common sense because, you know, you can use anything to defend yourself. A nail
file.
You can
use a pen to stab someone in the neck.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's so many
anything.
But your average person doesn't think that way. That's why they're different. It's only the
people. The more gruesome you make it, like the better, because that becomes, like the ghost movie said, a very powerful visual psychic disincentive for anybody else to mess with you.
Peter,
just like
what'd
your diaper did.
Peter, what did you
just like your diaper did.
No,
yeah.
Peter, what
oh, guys,
you
my time is almost up. Is there anything
no,
that's
like
what
I'm
said.
Sorry to cut you short, but I'm like
Peter, you taught me what?
Yeah.
The moment that I rip that can in two, it's not cutting someone's jugular. It's rip their eyes out. Because that prevents fear, or that makes fear in the other terrorist eyes. That's what I'm saying. It's like everything that we do, it's not just a matter of, hey, how do you do this? It's a mental game of how do you complete it. And Peter knows how to complete the game.
And isn't that merely what Star Wars was all about? You know, we always say a fight begins and ends in your mind. And,
exactly.
You know, and that's absolutely true. It has nothing to do with your body or anything else. It's your mind that's doing the fighting. That's the basis
so
of the entire
you
goat.
Peter on your show, by you having Peter on your show, you have no idea, literally, the doors you opened up to your world.
Oh.
You have no idea.
I'm in trouble now. But thank you so much, guys, for being on my show. I really, really appreciate you guys taking the time out. And I hope I can have you guys both back on again because people are really loving the show today. Thank you so much.
Well, you tell me when Peter's back on, I'll call in.
Sweet! So we'll get you back on Ninja Sunday again, okay?
All right.
I'm in.
All right.
Ninja
well,
Dad!
Thank you, guys. Huh?
Thanks, Shelley.
Okay. Well, you guys have a good Sunday.
All right. And I'll hang up now then.
Hey,
okay.
All right. Thanks.
Call me when you're done.
Yeah. What's that?
Bye.
Call me when you're done.
Talk to you later. Bye. Okay.
Right,
bye.
Guys.
Okay. Bye-bye. Wow, was that not an interesting show? Where does the time go? Now I have to switch from ninja mode to zombie mode, so that's something I have to go look forward to playing a zombie today, and I'm so excited because I don't have to get all pretty. The messier, the better it is, but it's going to be awesome. I can't wait. Everyone, thank you so much in support, and it's like I'm going to get some really interesting people for my shows as time go on. I've done over 150 shows so far, so I'm so excited. Ninja Sundays is the best day of the week. Well, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in, and
anybody that has a dream, just remember, you are as good as anybody else. And if I can do it, Shelley Unshocks, the girl with the funny accent, originally from Boston, Massachusetts, up here in the North Pole, where the penguins and the polar bears are still running around, hopefully the spring will come, you know, you can do it too. It's one step at a time. I do believe in that, and I'll believe in you if no one else believes you if you have a dream. Well, anyway, this is, once again, I'm closing the show with Battle Song as they open the show. And just like with this song, it has to set the music, the mood for a film, and it's really positive. We're part of a film company that I'm part of for our film, Falcare. And once again, we'll post the fundraiser where you guys will see if anybody would like to donate on Peter's wall, Ron's wall, and my wall today, and you can check everyone out. So anyway, thank you so much for tuning in, and have a good day.